Do we treat the Bible like a book of fables? Are the miracles of Jesus Christ just fanciful stories? When we read through the gospel accounts and hear of the things that Jesus did, do we treat them with as much respect and authenticity as we would a Grimm's fairy tale? It's hard for us at this distance, with so many other influences, so many other stories that have impacted our lives and coloured our imaginations, it's hard for us to understand the impact of Jesus' life upon those who observed it. I mean, you think about it. You think about some of the things that you've heard of Jesus doing. You think about the time when blind men called out to him. And having cried out at the tops of their voices until the crowd having failed to silence them, Jesus approaches them and speaks to them and heals them. And suddenly, here are men who once needed help to navigate the streets, being able to see. You think of the paralyzed man whose four friends carried him onto a rooftop because the crowds around Jesus were so great that the house he was in was completely surrounded. And there they dug up the tiles of the roof and lowered their friend down into the midst of the crowd inside the house. Imagine standing there among those people and seeing Jesus call upon that lame man, that paralyzed man, to stand up, and watching a man whom you've known to be unable to walk suddenly to stand up and start walking. And so we could recount story after story after story of lame men walking, of blind men seeing, of deaf men hearing, of lepers being cleansed of an incurable disease, even of the dead being raised to life. These stories trip off our tongues without impacting our minds at all. So familiar are we with them. But even if we did feel their impact, what would these stories do to us? Would they radically change our thinking? Would they transform our lives? Would they illumine our understanding of who Jesus is? Well, this is the theme of this section of John's Gospel. As he turns his attention once again to the ministry of Jesus in Judea and in Galilee, the question that John poses to his readers is this: are you just looking for signs? Are you just looking for something to tickle your ears and tantalize your eyes? Is that all you see when you see Jesus? when you hear stories about his accomplishments? Is that as far as it goes? You see, signs and wonders, as real as they were in the life of Jesus, these are not simply a magic show, a conjurer with sleight of hand tricking the eyes and imaginations of the people into thinking that he's made lame men walk, and deaf men hear, and blind men see, and lepers cleansed. No, for all the familiarity that we have with these stories, for those people who walked the lanes of Judea and the streets of Jerusalem and sailed the Sea of Galilee, these things were real things that amazed them. In all their lives, they'd never seen anything like this. And the people flocked to Jesus. Crowds surrounded him as he walked down the lanes. Behind him was a host of people who were following him to see the next thing that he would do. And so, John tells us, he came to Cana in Galilee, where he had made water wine. Here's the theme: signs and wonders, the miraculous, and their effect upon us. John is emphasizing to his readers the reality that signs and wonders in and of themselves don't produce faith. You see, Jesus knew as he traveled from Samaria back to Galilee that a prophet has no honour in his hometown or in his home country. So when he came to Galilee and the Galileans welcomed him, why are they welcoming him? Because they've seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the feast. They too had been there. So even though that the miracle that we've read about, and we'll explore in a moment, is described by John, or enumerated by John, as the second miracle that Jesus had done in Galilee, he's actually done many more miracles. And these Galileans have seen the many more miracles. What John is doing by enumerating this miracle is bracketing this part of his gospel thematically. His whole theme has been, what will you do with the Messiah? The Messiah who has done away with the old and brought in the new. Who has earned a reputation as the saviour of the world. What will his people do? What will the Jews, who are the recipients of this gospel in the first place, what are they going to do about Jesus? You see, these words that he writes here are hot on the heels of the Samaritan awakening. There's been revival in Samaria. Those despised half-castes, they had received Jesus. They had responded to the word of Christ and believed it for themselves. The question is, what are John's readers going to do with Jesus? What are the Jews, what are the people in his homeland going to do with Jesus? Well, they're enthusiastic about him. They welcome him warmly. But why? Is it because they've heard the word of Christ for themselves and believed? No. They welcome him, they're enthusiastic about him because they've seen all that he had done in Jerusalem. And they're waiting to see more. He's in Galilee, among their own people. They want to see him perform miracles among their neighbours and friends. That's what they're interested in. There's a hunger among these people for the spectacular. Jesus himself says, and when he speaks these words to this official in verse 48, he's actually speaking to the people. Unless you people, as the NIV puts it, see signs and wonders, you will not believe. Yes, he's directly addressing the official who's come asking him for help. But the Greek distinguishes between the singular and the plural. We've lost that distinction in our contemporary English, and so we see the word you and we don't know whether it's you as an individual or you as a group that is being referred to. Well, here in the Greek it's you as a group. Unless you people, Jesus says, see signs and wonders, you will not believe. That's all you're really interested in. That's why you're enthusiastic in your welcome of me. That's why you follow me around. You want to see something spectacular once again. They're not interested, you see, in who Jesus is, but in what new party trick he's going to pull out of the hat. And it's into this setting, into this mindset, that John introduces the official with a sick son. A son who is at the point of death. And Jesus speaks into this official's life. The official comes, he's heard about Jesus. He's heard about what Jesus could do. He's heard that Jesus is now in Galilee. He's a day or two's walk away in Capernaum, but he heads over to Cana. He wants to see Jesus. He wants to express to him his need. He's desperate. Obviously, he's a man of means. He's a royal official. He works in the office of King Herod. He could afford the best doctors, but they couldn't do anything for him. No doubt he's exhausted every possibility that there was, and in desperation he heads over to Canaan and asks Jesus to come down and heal his son, who is at the point of death. He is his only hope. And it's in that setting that Jesus says, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. What really matters to you? Jesus is asking. Do you just want to see something spectacular? Well, while the most of the people who are gathered around as this encounter unfolds are only interested in the spectacular, this man reveals another interest. He doesn't care about signs. What does he care about? He cares about his son. He's not bothered whether Jesus can calm a storm, feed 5,000, raise a lame man, give blind men sight and deaf men hearing. He's not bothered about that at all. He's wondering, can this man restore life to my son? Can he make him well again? Will he give me back my son who is at the point of death? This is all he's interested in. Sir, come down before my child dies. Don't worry about signs and wonders. Just come and heal my son, please. I don't care how you do it, in what manner you do it. Just please do it. And Jesus says, go. Your son will live. And the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. What a contrast to the crowd around. You see, this man is showing the same kind of spirit as those Samaritans that Jesus has just left, but he's just one among many. And he believes the word of Jesus and he goes on his way. And as he goes, travelling again from Cana down towards the Sea of Galilee to Capernaum, up the steep hillside, his servants come and they meet him and they tell him the great news. His son was getting better. And it transpires that the moment of the turning point in his son's sickness was the very moment that he had been speaking to Jesus. And we're told that he himself believed and all his household. He had believed before. He had believed that the Jesus whom he had heard so much about, who had performed all kinds of miracles in Judea and in Jerusalem, he had believed that a word from Jesus could heal his son. But when this whole episode unfolds in all its glorious reality for this man, it's transformed from a story to something tangible for him. And his belief then takes on a far deeper, richer meaning. Here we have, for the first time, a phrase that will be repeated through the New Testament. A phrase connected with belief in Jesus, not simply as a miracle worker, not simply as a great teacher, even a prophet sent from God, but belief in Jesus as the Messiah, as the promised one who was to come. He believed, and all his household. Just as many on the day of Pentecost, just as Lydia in Philippi, and again the Philippian jailer, had believed, and all their household. This is the kind of faith that this man has. What Jesus did led to an acceptance of who Jesus is. And they have their lives transformed. through believing in this man. You see, the first miracle that Jesus had done in Galilee, in Cana, had led to belief in him as well. These signs and wonders were not just gimmicks. They were signs. They were demonstrations of who Jesus was. And what had unfolded in the mind of this official when he heard the news and understood the hour at which his son had been restored. What had unfolded in his mind was a comprehension of who Jesus was. That the sign had given evidence to that Jesus was the prophet who would bring healing, who would bring restoration, who would bring life, who would bring salvation. But so many others didn't believe. They saw the signs, the same sign that this man had seen, the same sign that the people at the wedding in Cana had seen, the same signs that had been performed in Judea and in Jerusalem. Many, many people had seen those signs, and it hadn't led to a true understanding of who Jesus was. Because ultimately, they wouldn't believe his word. They wouldn't believe the claims that he was making. Indeed, what we're going to find is that increasingly, the crowds become hostile towards him. They'll reject him. They'll turn their back on him. They'll begin plotting against him. And eventually they'll cry out for his crucifixion. Things won't get any better for Jesus in terms of popularity. They'll get worse. Because signs and wonders by themselves may tickle people's ears and tantalize people's eyes, but they don't necessarily transform people's lives. Without believing the word, just as this official believed the word of Jesus and then went and saw the reality of Jesus' power and understood the significance of who Jesus was, so it is even today, as people cry out for signs and long to see wonders and go off to the latest and the greatest prophets, until they will hear the word of Jesus and believe the word of Jesus, their lives will not be changed. They will remain the same after they see what they think are signs and wonders as they were before. Signs do not necessarily convince people. It is the word of Jesus, that must be believed. And this is the point that John is making to his readers. People aren't going to believe unless they see signs. That's all they're interested in, Jesus says. The people in Samaria had believed without seeing any signs. They had received the word of Christ, accepted it, and rejoiced in it. Now, what are John's readers going to do? Time and time and time again, John calls his readers to make a decision, to make a choice, to weigh up the evidence concerning Jesus, and to decide what they will do with it. What is their verdict concerning Jesus Christ? Jesus of Nazareth. Is he the Christ or is he not? And over and over and over again throughout this gospel, John brings another piece of evidence, another piece of evidence, another piece of evidence that will sum up to proving that Jesus is the Christ. But will they believe? And will they accept? And will they live by the implications of that? For them, it's going to mean the tearing down of a whole edifice of ideas that they've built concerning the coming Messiah. Jesus doesn't fit into their picture of him, you see. It's going to mean transformed thinking if they are to embrace Jesus as the Christ. But the same is true today. We can't think in terms of Jesus being the Son of God who came into the world to save sinners. We can't think in biblical terms concerning Jesus of Nazareth and not have our lives transformed. It must have an impact. It has implications for us. We can't simply go on as we did before if we truly believe and accept who Jesus is. That Jesus does have the power to restore life. To bring health and vitality back to that which was close to death. And of course these miracles are to be understood as they are intended to be a picture of us. And the fact that we, without Christ, without his intervention in our lives, are close to death. Death under the curse of God. And we need to see the works that Jesus does, but more than that, we need to believe the words that Jesus speaks concerning himself. And we need to understand that if Jesus is the Son of God who came into the world to save sinners, and if we believe that he did die on the cross to bear God's wrath against those who are doomed to destruction, to free them from that condemnation and to raise them to a life of service for God, then it has to lead to a transformation in our lives. We can't be the same people that we were before. We can't go about our business the same as we did before. We can't live our lives the same as we did before. If you do, then you haven't believed. If you can go on speaking the same language, doing the same things, having the same ambitions, with no change taking place, having seen what Jesus does and saying that you believe in him, then it's a falsehood. Our lives must be transformed. If we are made alive, if we become living, breathing servants of the living God, then it must be transformed. We live for him and not for ourselves. Just as this young lad who was close to death, his life would have been completely different after that moment as he began to recover and his strength was restored. No longer lying on his deathbed. Up and about and active. That's how those who believe in Jesus ought to be. Up and about and active in the service of the living God. So what do the signs and wonders of the New Testament tell you? That amazing things happened 2,000 years ago and it's all over now? Or that the Messiah has come and he accomplished his work in this world, and that he now reigns with all authority to bring people into his kingdom, to release them from their captivity, their bondage to sin. What do you see in Jesus? Will you accept that he is the Christ and live by the implications of that?